two crazy porks who host a show. They give relationship advice that you ought to know. Your thirst for entertainment, they will quench, cause Stephanie's a darling and Mike is a mensch. Pork therapy, advice this good is a rarity. It's cool, fun, and introspective. Relationship talk from a liberty perspective. Oh, and did I mention you can leave a message, you can voice a question, a joke, a comment, or something more at 419-PT-LOVE-4. Pork therapy, scatolidibop shabadooey. The revel in hilarity, it's pork therapy.
Okay.
Hello.
Hello.
We had kind of a false start there, didn't we?
The program was teasing us. This is Pork Therapy.
Yeah, and I'm Stephanie.
And I'm not.
You're not. Okay.
I'm not Stephanie.
But that doesn't say what you are.
I am Mike.
That's right. I like that introduction.
Yeah.
We've got to spice things up, you know. This is our 125th.
Believe I'm guessing. Who's Stephanie with this time? Oh, the same guy for the past 125 shows.
The same guy with the same voice, but he changed his name. He's the artist formerly known as Mike, right?
Yeah.
The pork farm formerly known as Mike. Mm. Yeah, so hi. You can go to our website, porktherapy.com, right? And that's...
You sure can.
P-O-R-C-therapy.com. But why would anyone want to go to our website?
Because there, they can do everything there is to do about pork therapy. Listen to a past show.
They can
suggest future shows.
Nice.
You know, something like that.
Yeah, something.
They can read our awesome bios and find out our real history.
And they can also donate, right?
You can donate money to the show so we can expand.
Mm-hmm.
And what else can they do? They can, what's on the right side over there?
The female list.
You can join our female
really
list.
Which we haven't really utilized very much.
You can join it, though.
Yeah, you can join it.
You can leave comments on shows.
Like, you know, several dozens of contacts, but have never sent out an email except once, and then we got a response that was like, you should email people earlier if you're going to record. So we learned from our failures here on Pork Therapy, right, Mike?
Eventually.
Yeah. So anyway, we're a show about voluntary relationships, which are forming the basis of a voluntary society, right?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. You know, I thought of a cool tagline today that...
Uh-oh,
I was wondering if we could change it again, because this would be like the fifth time we've changed it, but I was thinking of it, and now I can't remember it, but it was kind
Pork
of
therapy,
pointless.
We can't remember the tag.
That would be perfect. That would just be so profound, you know?
Yeah.
I think it was something like pork therapy, voluntary relationships in the voluntary society, or in the growing voluntary society, or something like that.
It needs work.
Yeah, it needs work.
Actually, I kind of just like voluntary relationships. Because those two words...
The show about voluntary relationships?
Yeah.
I like that.
Okay.
Cool. Yeah. Well, all right.
People might need to, you know, inquire, you know, internally or from us, what is a voluntary relationship? But that's great.
Yeah, because then they'll think about what it actually is.
Right.
And of course, you know, we're talking about, we want all human interactions to be voluntary.
Right.
Our show reflects the fact that we're peaceful, property rights respecting advocates of a voluntary society. I guess you could say that. You like that, Mike?
I like that.
Cool.
But I think the shorter version for the show tag would be better.
Oh, yeah,
okay.
Definitely.
All right.
The show about voluntary relationships.
So why don't we talk about an aspect of voluntary relationships?
Well, I'm not sure if I agree to that.
What? I'm going to force you to.
And no, of course, that's not how people solve their problems. But, oh, you know what? We in all this talk about the tagline, we got confused and didn't mention how people can ask us their relationship questions voluntarily, right?
Voluntarily. You can type up an email and send it to questions@porktherapy.com.
Yeah, or you can call us at 419-PT-LOVE-4. And we were so excited when we got to the studio tonight because we realized that we had some calls on the line, right, Mike?
Yes, excellent.
Yeah, or at least one call.
Yes, right. not this show.
Not this show,
but
right.
It's coming up.
But, you know, we were excited by that because we seldom get calls, I guess. We have this phone number that we've had for a long time, I guess now 125 episodes, or maybe we got it in, like, episode 10.
Something.
But, you know, we rarely get calls, and it's always nice to hear a listener's voice. And it was someone that we had never spoken to before.
Yeah, that's great.
And they asked a great question. So stay tuned to Pork Therapy for more of that. And, of course, our website one more time, porctherapy.com. Right, Mike?
Right.
Cool. Okay, should we get to the question?
Yeah, this show is an email question.
Right.
And we're going to actually flip a coin to see which one of us reads it.
If you've been listening to our show, you know that for the last...
Ever.
Well, ever. We always say, we have this like little tradition of saying that we are going to flip a coin to determine who reads the question. But we also usually reveal in every episode that there is never an actual coin. And we're just being facetious when we say there is. But in this show, we actually have a real coin. And what kind of coin is it, Mike?
This is an ounce of fine silver.
Cool. So it's actually
real money.
Real money.
Yes, real money.
Yeah.
With real value and not the value enforced upon it, fiat, by fear.
Well, yeah, that's what fiat is. It's not backed
value.
By value.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's money. It's currency that's not backed
it's
by value.
It's backed by faith.
But is backed by faith and force.
And force.
Yeah, because, of course, the dollars and all the, you know, the pennies that are worth, you know, less in copper or whatever. I didn't explain that well, but all the coins and all the paper money.
And all governments.
Federal Reserve notes and all governments, not just the U.S., are so-called legal tender, which means the government forces everyone to accept that note. It even says on the paper, you must accept this for all debts, public and private. So
on our tender.
Yeah.
On the government's tender, the United States government's.
Right. And it has no intrinsic value. It's just that people believe that.
And it has no back value. It used to, a $20 bill used to mean you can turn it in and get, you know, a certain amount of silver.
Right.
Now you can't get anything.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So, but we actually have silver coin and we're going to flip it to see who reads
the
question.
So you have the tails and I have heads.
Okay. Is that the tail? That looks...
I don't know.
It's more like a pork.
You've got the pork and I've got the hamp.
Okay.
All right. Here's the flip.
Whoa. Oh, well, it landed on the hamp.
Oh, so let's do 2 out of 3 then. Okay, this question, it starts
what
with a...
What was the point? Sometimes I really wonder, Mike.
This question starts with two sentences of flashback and then the question.
And I guess to give you background, this this person has asked us a question before, and...
Well, he says that.
Okay, no, go for it.
Hey, guys, I'd like to update you on my progress and self-understanding since I wrote to you for podcast episode 72. So, there you go. Go to our website and check out podcast 72 to find out this question asker's previous question.
Right. Spoiler alert.
He says, here's the spoiler. I've accepted the fact that I'm gay, and I've even told a select few friends about it.
So, yeah, the last time he wrote to us, he was questioning his sexuality, I guess, and wondering if he was gay, and he told us a little bit about his history. And so we talked about it, and we thought that he was gay, and we encouraged him to come out and just embrace that. And it sounds like he did, which is super cool. I'm excited about that.
Yeah, congratulations.
And by the way, I just want to put in a plug for the Prometheus Unchained radio show and podcast, which is Dale from Anarchy in Your Head started doing this podcast about maybe 2 months ago. And I've been a guest host a couple of times, and it's been really fun, but basically it's LGBT talk radio from a perspective that embraces liberty. And I've always had fun when I'm on the show. So we can, I guess, link to that in the show notes. And it's also heard on the Liberty Radio Network, just like us, right? Right, Mike?
Yeah, I guess it is. And yes, we are.
Yeah. So check that out, question asker, if you haven't already. You may enjoy it.
Why isn't there an H in there?
What would the H stand for? You mean an LGBT?
Yeah. Why are they excluding heteros?
Well, I think it's supposed to be implicit that there are like straight allies in there, but you know, it's one of those things where the whole world, it's a hetero world and you know,
okay.
Got to embrace the homos and the trans and everybody else. Anyway.
Okay.
Okay. Right.
So the quest goes on. Anyway, I'm writing 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm writing to you today to get your thoughts on why people are so passive aggressive these days. Many students here at UNH, University of New Hampshire, will often lie to my face just to avoid a confrontation, even if they like me as a person and the situation is relatively minor. One person told me that ignorance is bliss and that as long as appearances are fine, then I should be happy. I was mortified. I suppose people could call this being polite. However, I find it to be extremely rude to lie to a person just so that everyone can be happy. In quotes.
In quotes, yeah.
I'm certainly not happy with anything short of the truth, and I take it personally that people would lie to me, for it shows that they either do not trust me, or are afraid of me, or have no respect for me. That's a damn shame, because I have much respect for other people. So I think it's time to stop reading and start talking.
Yeah, I think so too. Did you have some thoughts you wanted to talk about, Mike?
Yeah. So the question asker, let's give him a name.
Joe.
Joe says, I find it extremely rude to lie to a person just so that everyone can be happy. Mm-hmm. I do also, Joe, but I don't think everyone does. I think some people prefer that.
Yeah.
Or accept it.
Yeah, I think you're right. Or maybe they think there's no other option, but they've never encountered someone who was honest, which is really sad. But
or maybe they just think it's the best option. Well, if I see, he asks earlier, they lied just to avoid a confrontation. I think tons of people don't like confrontation.
Yep.
So if they think you're going to get angry or you're going to get embarrassed or
even that you're going to get violent,
or whatever, they think that there's a confrontation, even a minor one,
right,
they might rather just tell you a little white lie in their mind, mm-hmm, and or a big lie and have everyone be happy. No, that's
at least in the short term.
Exactly. That's a very short term view. When someone finds out the truth, then the anger will be even greater. But
yeah. But and inevitably they do find out the truth later.
Yeah.
I mean, in almost every situation I can think of, that is what ends up happening. So it's usually just better to be honest and upfront and straightforward.
Right.
And question asker Joe, I think you realize this, and that's why you're writing us this question. But, you know, I was thinking about this when I first read this question, and I think I prefer, and probably Mike also prefers, honesty pretty much all the time.
Almost all the time.
Yeah.
I was thinking about this recently, and there's a time when I would not mind untruths. I won't call them lies, but just
omissions, maybe?
Omissions or merging of information that's not quite accurate.
Uh-huh.
So, for example, if someone's telling me a story or telling me some facts that I need to know, a phone message or whatever,
mm-hmm,
or telling me any piece of information, if they, I don't need them to tell me exactly who gave them this information and when, what time it was, and every word of the message.
Mm.
And this is not an example that's working for me here, but
well, if someone might tolerate,
in the reverse, if I was telling someone a story or some information, I don't think it's important to the story, for example, that Joe and Jane were with me when I had the tuna sandwich. So I might just say, I had a tuna sandwich that day.
Right.
Yeah, that's still a bad example. But, you know, here's a better example. What if it's totally irrelevant that Joe and Jane were with me when I had the tuna sandwich?
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm telling you this, I might just say, yeah, I had lunch alone the other day and I had a tuna sandwich. Because that way the story is simplified, because you're not going to say, or think, what were you doing with Joe? You never eat lunch with Joe, or whatever, you know? They're irrelevant to the story.
But what if they are relevant, just to play devil's advocate?
Yes.
Like, what if you have a monogamous girlfriend, and she's like, oh, so how was your lunch the other day? And you're like, good, I had a tuna sandwich. But you don't say, good, I had a tuna sandwich with Sally, and we were playing footsies under the table, you know?
then that's different. That's relevant.
Yeah.
That's not a minute piece of information, irrelevant information.
Yeah, yeah.
You might not want her to know to avoid the confrontation, but it's not irrelevant.
And again, that's an example of a short-term situation where it would create, you know, maybe avoid a conflict in the short term, but would
create a bigger conflict when it comes to light.
Yeah, exactly. And what you should be doing is saying, I'm not quite happy in this relationship, I'm interested in other people, or, you know, whatever. But getting back to something that I said a little while ago, I was thinking that I prefer honesty in pretty much any situation, and so does Mike, which he confirmed. But, and so it's very difficult for me to understand why someone would not prefer honesty, and why someone would want to essentially be misled is maybe not the right word, but to deny reality, essentially, right?
Yep.
I mean, I guess reality can be harsh and I can lead to bad feelings, but ultimately, I think that truth is something that
is
to be valued. Yeah, I mean,
there is no avoiding it.
Yeah,
I mean, you can lie.
Catch up to you.
Exactly. You can't. I mean, you could lie and say that bus isn't going to hit you, but it is.
Yeah, and not only that, but maybe this is getting a little too philosophical or abstract, but I think that it's important to know the truth. I want to know the truth. I don't want to believe things that are not right or are not correct. Right? Like, I think it's important to try to determine what's true in the universe instead of just kind of, you know, living your life and never examining the validity of anything around you. Right?
Or examining it and accepting falsehoods.
Yeah.
falsities. So yeah. I guess that plops us right into the big R.
Oh, religion.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Religion is lie.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know.
I can't say there is a God or isn't a God. I mean, with any certainty, with any, you know, with absolute certainty, mm-hmm. I don't think there is. But that's not even the point of my bringing religion into this, or saying religion is a lie. Because even if there is a God, and of course every religion has their own God, so which one's right?
Yeah.
They all lie about, for example, every other God.
Yeah.
Every religion lies about how to interpret their word, you know, their book.
And even within religions, there are different
interpretations.
Yep. So many people interpret scriptures so differently.
Right.
Yeah. All that is totally true, Mike. But even if you look at the concept of a deity, it's not even something that can exist.
Right.
Like I'm going to sound like Stefan Molyneux because I just listened to Against the Gods, which is a free book that he has about atheism and agnosticism, I guess, kind of debunking agnosticism. But it's like, if you look at a God, as he said, it's consciousness without material form, which in every other thing that we know, consciousness comes as a result of matter.
It's energy without mass, I believe, or whatever.
Yeah, energy without matter.
Matter.
It's something that cannot be observed and has no...
And yet, somehow we know about it.
And somehow we know about it, and we know that it affects everything, and it's pulling all these strings. It's just, it's all these contradictions, and it's pretty absurd. I mean, you know, like he compares it to a square circle, or like a flaming unicorn trapped underwater.
But people, I think we're getting into another show here about
probably
an anti-religion show, but I guess to bring it back to this question, or we haven't even gotten to the question yet, but to bring it back
we've
to this topic, a lot of people like religion.
Yeah.
Lots of people like religion. They prefer faith. They prefer untruths or non-truths or...
And when you confront them with things that are logical and rational and make sense,
bam.
They just say, well, you can't touch my faith.
Yeah, you can't explain it. It's supernatural. It's above reality.
Yeah, it's outside of reality.
Yeah.
Or then they'll say, have you ever heard people say stuff like, well, maybe in another dimension God exists or something like that.
Yeah.
Maybe God couldn't exist the way we define it in this reality, but maybe there are alternate realities.
Or even
really?
A,
is there any
Even a weaker comeback is... You know, you're not dead. You don't know if there's no afterlife.
So you better believe.
Yeah.
What is that, Pascal's Wager?
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, well, Pascal's Wager was this famous thing where he said that if you believe in God and you live your life according to the way that you think God wants you to live, then you're going to be likely to go to heaven, right? Because you follow God's instructions and all that. If you don't believe in God, but you're not sure, then you might as well live your life well and be a good person because you're covering your bases, essentially. And no, actually, I mean, because sometimes in every religion that I know of, if you live your life and according to how the religion wants you to live, you're harming yourself.
You're harming yourself on this earth.
You're getting psychological hang-ups.
Yep.
You're thinking that...
Or even physical. Look at self-flagellation. Oh, look at self-denial.
Yeah.
Pleasure denial.
Yeah. Or even just the fact that so many people in so many different religions have sexual hang-ups around, for instance, being gay, you know, as the question asker understands, maybe, if he was raised religious. Even sexual hang-ups about just enjoying sex. That's not the only way that religion harms people, but it's one of them. Heck, I was raised Jewish, and I really like the taste of bacon, but I thought that it was a bad thing to eat bacon or to eat chicken with cheese or, like, you know, some milk and meat together. That was against the kosher laws. And so I thought, hey, God doesn't like this if I eat these things, even though they taste good. And you're supposed to somehow reconcile that? What about the fact that so many religions teach you that you don't own your body? Now the not so strict propertarians are going to get in touch with me and say, well, you don't own your body because then you'd be property owner and property at the same time. And yeah, I'm sympathetic to that argument that human beings are not property, but at least you control your body. And what I learned as a religious, you know, my religious upbringing was that my body was a rental from God. And that God has the right to do whatever he wants with it because he created it and he gave it to me. And that I don't have the right to do whatever I want with it because it's really not mine. How damaging is that to someone's self-esteem?
Yeah.
What about heaven and hell? What about the kids that are told about people burning for all eternity and being in excruciating pain for an amount of time that they can't control? And then you're supposed to be good and you're supposed to be a moral person, not because you're a human being and you have empathy for other humans
or because
you can understand
or because it's good to be good
or because it's good to be
just
good.
To avoid punishment.
Yeah. It's not an intrinsic motivation to be good. It's a completely extrinsic, and it's just a fear of punishment. And if you read the book Punished by Rewards by Alfie Kohn, which and another book, Unconditional Parenting, which actually Wes Bertrand is doing a podcast series on Complete Liberty about unconditional parenting right now, and I've been enjoying what I've heard so far.
Oh, yeah.
You have to start telling someone from an early age that there's this man in the sky who's controlling what everything you do, and he'll cry if you eat pork, and, you know, and he'll send you to a place where there's
a turtle. And he's dead, but he's not dead, and he's three people, but one person.
Yeah. And he knows all and sees all, but he has no material form and no eyes and anything.
He knows all and sees all, and yet if you want something, you have to ask for it. He doesn't just know it.
Yeah. Yeah, and maybe he'll answer your prayers, and maybe not, and
right.
He works in mysterious ways.
Right, so if, you know, yeah. if he kills thousands of people with a tsunami, that's good, and if he if he makes thousands of people live, that's good.
You didn't get the memo, that was a punishment for the gays.
That's right.
We're totally kidding about that, in case it wasn't clear.
The gays
obviously.
Part, not the God is a jerk part.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, no, I mean, I wouldn't say God is a jerk, because then that would be like Maltheism, right? Like you believe in God, but you believe that God is bad because bad things happen in the world.
Maltheism? Did you just invent that?
No, it's a real word. It's actually like a lot of people who say that they were atheists and then they found Christ or whatever. They were actually not atheists. They were Maltheists, because atheists just don't even acknowledge the existence of God. It's like, what's that? But Maltheists are like, yeah, there's probably a God and he's a jerk.
Wow.
Yeah.
I've never heard of that. And I'm glad.
Yeah. I don't know where I heard it, but I'm sure we can Google it. Anyway, Mike.
I guess to turn this back to lies.
Yeah.
Lying to avoid conflict. Joe continues. It's not a sign of respect to be vague or sugarcoat things. It's not a sign of respect to lie, even if your intended goal is to not hurt my feelings. Well, I disagree. It might be a sign of respect to try and not hurt your feelings. It's just a bad method.
Yeah.
It's not going to work.
I think he may be reading into the other people's intentions.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe they think they are being respectful.
Exactly.
Maybe they believe that because they don't know anything else, because no one has ever been
truly
honest with them.
Or that's right. That's what they see in life. Avoid conflict and everyone's happier for the moment. And hence I'm going to do that for you because I respect you.
Yeah.
It's not going to work. But
I mean, somehow they learned that coping strategy.
Yes.
And so they must believe it's good in some way, or else they wouldn't continue to do it. But I don't. Yeah.
So he says,
but I can see how he feels. He feels like he's not getting the respect.
Oh yeah, I don't like it.
And I'm just
pointing out that he says it's not a sign of respect, and I'm saying it could be, even though I don't like it.
Yeah.
Okay. Joe says, my feelings are hurt exponentially more when I am lied to.
Yeah.
This brings me to my questions. When does being polite turn into being passive aggressive? Jump in yet, or should I keep reading?
I have an example I can think of.
Okay.
Have you ever known people who refuse to break up with people, like refuse to end relationships?
Yes.
They just basically start ignoring. They start stop returning calls or emails.
They start cheating.
Yeah. But they won't just say, hey, this relationship, I'm done with
right.
it. You know, it's not working out for me or
yeah.
whatever. When it would be so easy, you know, usually.
It wouldn't be easy. I think if it were easy, people would choose it.
Yeah, I think you're right, Mike. Maybe I should rephrase
better.
It would be simple.
It would be less painful.
Yeah.
They don't realize it, but it would be like, I don't know. Would it be like ripping a Band-Aid off fast versus slow? Because then you get a quick shock of pain instead of a long, slow, drawn-out pain?
I think so.
I think it's not a great example, because if you don't say, I'm done with this relationship, and keep, you know, struggling along and cheating and getting more angry with them and et cetera, then it's not just slow, drawn-out pain like a slow Band-Aid.
It's more pain overall.
Right. It might even build up to an explosion at the end.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's not even funny. It's just, it's sad, because the number one reason, like, when people do that, when they do the disappearing act, instead of just saying, this relationship isn't working out for me, I think we should end it, then when they do that disappearing act, the number one reason that they cite for their behavior is because I didn't want to hurt him,
right.
Or because I didn't want to hurt her, whatever. And it's so ironic, because they know that it hurts. They've probably had people do that to them before, but they still do it to other people.
I think it's an excuse. I think people do it because they want to avoid conflict, something hard to do, and they need excuses and reasons to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
They need that to be okay.
And I think, I'm sure I have done that in the past, and I feel horrible about it. And so, I mean, all I can do now is just realize why I did it and not do it again. But
yeah,
it's so common. And it's so ironic because people say they do it because they don't want to hurt others.
Right, but really and what home. They're what are they doing? They're taking a say a 2-year relationship that should be over,
yeah.
and stretching it into a 3-4-5-year relationship that's not only yeah. unhappy but will end anyway.
Wasting everybody's
they're,
time.
They're wasting years of their life and the other person's yeah. life. That's not making them feel better.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so
that's an example of how being polite would turn into being. Or being, quote, polite would turn into being passive-aggressive.
Right, and that's an extreme example. I think maybe there's smaller, nonchalant-type examples.
Yeah, yeah, that was just the first one that came to mind.
Okay.
Like, if you think of others, jump in.
I think there are, but I can't think of one now.
Yeah, they're everywhere.
So Joe continues, should we strive to always tell the truth in our relationships, regardless of how painful it might be? I say no. I say there's times when lying's probably the right thing to do, or the less harmful thing to do.
Hmm. Well, everybody always says,
or maybe it's the bad thing to do, but you make mistakes. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Well, I don't know. People, when they talk about lying, there's always like the classic example of, you know, someone holds a gun to your head and says, "Where's your wife? I'm going to go kill her."
Yeah.
Right. And so you say, "I don't know where she is," even though you do.
Yeah. Lie so. To aggression. To
yeah.
aggressors.
Yeah. That's a lie to meet aggression. But, what if it's a lie that's not meant to meet aggression? What if it's just meant to
How about
feelings?
Do these pants make me look fat?
That's a tough one, yeah. I think most people would be tempted to say, no, of course not. Right?
How
because
about
they know that's what the other person wants to hear. But
and how important is it really?
But on the other hand, what if you are concerned about someone's health? Maybe you could bring that up.
Yeah.
Or maybe you could say, no, you look gorgeous. I'm attracted to you. Maybe that is true.
Well,
but then later on say something like, hey, you're concerned about your health. I've seen you stop going to the gym. What's up?
What about an empathetic, maybe a sympathetic lie? Like, what if your love is in a car accident, maybe not even through their own fault, and they're mm-hmm. disfigured?
Mm-hmm.
And they're in the hospital recovering, and they're, you know, incredibly sad and in pain.
Yeah.
And they haven't seen themselves. There's no mirrors. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's a big scar across their face or their nose is missing or whatever.
Yeah.
And they say, how do I look? I mean, you don't yeah. want to add stress to them. You don't yeah. want – they're going to find out sooner or later. You could try and change the topic. What are you going to say?
I would probably say something like, it doesn't matter how you look. I'm just so glad that you're okay and I love you no matter
yeah.
what.
Yeah.
Right? Or
– That's true to you but not to them. It doesn't – perhaps it doesn't matter how they look to you. You'll mm-hmm. love them anyway, but
yeah.
it probably does matter to them.
Okay, well, you look a little rough right now, but
yeah.
I'm sure you'll be fine
yeah.
in a couple weeks.
Yeah, you look like you've been in a car accident.
Yeah.
It'll heal.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're saying then the answer to Joe's question is, should we strive to always tell the truth, is yes, no matter how painful it will be.
Strive to always tell the truth. Yeah, I like that. Yeah, I have a pretty high standard for always telling the truth. And I think you can do it in, as we just alluded
yeah.
to, I think you can do it in nice and empathetic ways yep. that are considerate of other people's feelings. But I don't like what the question asker is referring to, which is just the
which
avoid conflict
to
at any cost,
yeah.
say anything as long as it'll keep the peace.
Right.
I don't want that.
Yeah. I agree, yeah. I guess. I just was shying away from the word always. Should we always tell the truth? But
yeah.
then you said, should we strive to always tell the truth?
Yeah.
So yes.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I think it's an ideal.
So Joe continues, referring to a lying to avoid conflict.
Mm-hmm.
Where does this behavior stem from?
Yeah.
And we talked about this before the show, and you have
yeah.
an idea.
Yeah, well, I mean, religion was one of the things that we cited, but I think that we can definitely relate this to government and liberty,
mm-hmm.
because there are a lot of people, obviously kids learn this from parents, right? Kids learn this when they see adults doing it. They see adults handle potential confrontations or conflicts by sweeping them under the rug, right? And by avoiding conflict at all costs, even when it's at the expense of the truth.
Right.
Right. Okay. So there are people in society, and often they're called government. And what they do, if we look at it really honestly and unabashedly, is theft, right? They confiscate people's money by threat of force.
They take everyone's money by threat
of
force without their permission, and that's called taxation.
Yes, it's called taxation because taxation is a euphemism.
Right.
Right?
I think that's your point. I jumped in ahead of the bandwagon.
Oh,
sorry.
No, it's perfect.
Okay.
I'm glad you made that point.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, this is what they do. They do things like take people's property, which is their money, something that they have no claim to. I mean, if someone takes someone else's property by threat of force, that's called stealing, right? That's called coercion. If a group of people who are wearing nice suits or are even wearing blue suits get together and
do the same act
and do the exact same act, maybe in a little bit more stylized fashion, I guess, it's called taxation, right? And so why does a group of people have rights or can do things that individuals cannot do?
Only that certain group.
Yeah.
If you get any other group of people together and they do it, it's still stealing because the original group government has a monopoly on it.
Right. And not only do they have a monopoly, but they have this cloak of legitimacy that, you know, I've heard a lot of people use that phrase before, the cloak of legitimacy.
Yeah.
And that means that people believe that what they're doing is legitimate and that it's not akin to theft.
And I think that ties it back into the question.
Exactly.
So where does this behavior stem from? Well, government lies to everyone constantly.
Yeah.
And it's not hard to see. What? Money was taken out of my paycheck without my permission? Oh, government calls that taxation.
Right.
So it happens all the time, and it's just pounded into our brains as normal.
And in fact, it's this...
Or good, even. It's
concept.
Good for community.
Yeah, yeah, or good. Exactly, Mike. That's a great point. Yeah, I mean, the thing is, this is so heavily ingrained in people's consciousness that sometimes people have an extremely difficult time even admitting or seeing the fact that...
The gun in the room.
Government, yes, the gun in the room. The fact that everything government does, it does by force. And that force would not be considered legitimate if it were used by someone else besides the government.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right. And then people will sometimes say, well, this is a total tangent from the question. It's an anti-government rant. But people then would...
I like it.
People, yeah, let's do it. People then might say, well, the government is a special group. It has special privileges. And then you ask them, well, how do they get there? Well,
yeah.
Government is just a bunch of people.
Yeah.
And you elect them. And you some people vote.
Yeah.
And those people then have power over everyone. So how did, if you don't have the power to go steal your neighbor's, you know, 20% of your neighbor's paycheck,
mm-hmm.
when you vote for someone, how do they have that power? It doesn't work.
Yeah, how can you appoint rights to someone who doesn't have those rights to begin with?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And not only that, but what about the concept of being born into a specific geographical designation, political designation?
Right.
And then supposedly, after not agreeing to it, you know, you never signed any kind of contract, even though people will claim there's the so-called
social contract. Yeah, that's another example of a lie. A social contract is a newspeak term made to
show me this contract.
Yeah, it's
what are
invented
the terms?
To
where's
it's
my
a,
signature?
It's a concept to legitimize force against you.
Absolutely.
It's a social contract. Oh, a contract is good, so I guess I have to be forced.
Yeah. I mean, I believe in being a good person and not harming other people. And I think that, yeah, that would lead to a better society. And I don't want to initiate force on anyone. And I mean, there are lots of reasons to follow those basic principles. But I never agreed to follow a social contract. I never agreed to give up an arbitrary portion of my income. I never agreed that it's okay that the people who choose to go to the voting booth and fight for control of the gun of government have legitimate authority over me to determine who is going to be my ruler.
Right.
I don't consent to that. And so, I mean, in order to believe this stuff and to believe that it is legitimate to use the political system to accomplish, I guess, social ends, you have to accept a certain amount of lying, delusion.
Actually, quite a lot.
Yeah.
You have to either, you know, be close to lobotomized and actually not think
right.
ever about certain things.
Yeah.
Or when you see a news headline or your neighbor talks or your colleague, you overhear something at lunch and it's the spark of an idea that this is bad and you don't think about it.
Yeah.
I mean, you choose to ignore it. That's not thinking.
Right.
That is accepting a lie.
Yeah. 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 That's taking the blue pill.
Yeah.
Right. So we were talking about the roots of this, the roots of this kind of passive-aggressive behavior that involves lying to avoid hurting people's feelings in the short term. And yeah, it comes from government schools, it comes from families,
and government
it comes
itself,
from religion, and
modeling.
Generally, yeah, it comes from government itself. That's what I think, anyway.
Well, I originally thought it would basically come from your parents and whatever whomever you were around growing up.
Mm-hmm.
But then, of course, where do they learn it? Mm-hmm. And, well, maybe their religion. Well, where did the priest learn it? Well, there's only one thing that's ubiquitous on Earth, and that's government.
Yeah.
I mean...
even in prehistoric times, maybe there weren't the same kind of governments that we have today, but there were definitely people who were in search of power,
yep.
who were looking for a justification to apply morality subjectively, and to do
what
things...
I want you to do, and here's why you want to do it.
Right, yeah, because they wanted to dominate other people. Mm-hmm. They wanted to get the resources to, I guess, ensure their safety or their survival or whatever. But in the process of that, they thought a good way to achieve those ends was, you know, to make themselves above the rules of morality. And to say that they could do things like stealing and murdering probably and other all kinds
it's
of things.
It's for your own
like
good.
Yeah, to say that they could do those things,
yeah.
but other people can't.
Yep.
And so somehow they had to justify that. So they essentially started by lying to themselves, and then they passed that on to other people.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually everyone started to believe that delusion. And there we go today. We end up with a society where people won't break up. They'll say, it's not you, it's me. Or they'll just stop calling, you know.
It's not you, it's me.
Yeah.
We did an episode on that too, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. But, I mean, it's not just, of course, it doesn't just apply to dating. It applies to everything.
Yep.
People just, I think honestly, these are the roots of people wanting to avoid conflicts. It started off with people who just wanted to be sort of morally above the moral rules that should apply to everyone and wanted to justify it.
How can we work to reverse it?
Oh, good idea. Okay. How can we work to, yes, he does say that in the question. How can we work to reverse it? Well, I have a couple of thoughts on this.
Yep.
When I've encountered this kind of behavior
personally,
yeah. In my personal life. And ultimately we have the most control over our personal lives. So this is where we can start change, if that's what we want to see. When I've encountered this kind of behavior, like the kind of polite at all costs, avoid conflict at all costs, maybe that's not even the right way to word it, but just the kind of, when I feel that I'm not getting honesty, how about
mm-hmm.
that?
Okay.
When I've encountered people that aren't giving me the honesty that I want.
Okay.
What I do is exemplify that behavior in my own actions. So for example, if I wish that someone would be more honest with me and would say genuine things and be interested in what I have to say, I'll do that to them. And you know, I find that in almost every single case, they will want to reciprocate. Because I think a lot of people find it refreshing when you're honest. I mean, maybe not honest in a caustic way, like, oh God, you're so fat, that kind of thing. I guess that could
tactful,
be that could
honest.
Be considered honest. But when you're real and you're not afraid to be a little bit vulnerable and to express things that you're thinking and feeling and things that maybe people wouldn't normally say, I think that people appreciate that. It's refreshing and they'll give it back to you. They'll see you do that and they'll say, hey, I like that. I think I'm gonna try that too. Have you ever done that, Mike, or experienced that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it's possible also that people who refuse to reciprocate will just not want to hang around you because that's a significant...
That might be true also.
Yeah.
It might drive people away who you don't want to be associated with.
Right.
And, you know, I know this question asker is, I believe, a college student
yep.
or somewhere around that age.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, question asker, I really feel for you. I understand what that's like. I felt very alone, especially because when I was in college, I was not living in New Hampshire. I had no significant community of liberty lovers, I guess you could say, to speak of. And so I felt like I was walking around every day having these really superficial interactions with people and that no one really wanted to communicate on a deep level with me or was interested in the things that I was interested in. And this is even before I really started delving into any of the psychological stuff that I think relates to freedom. This was just talking about liberty, being honest about things, not wanting to just basically drink all the time and have sex with whoever, you know? That wasn't something I was wanting to do in college when it seemed like almost everybody else was. And, you know, it was kind of lonely. And so I can kind of see in that environment someone feeling like they want to just withdraw and just not really, you know, why should I try to make an effort to be honest and be real with people because they're not going to do it back. But I think you might be surprised at the results. Even if you try this and 90% of the people are not receptive to it, which I doubt it would be that high, you'll find the 10% of people who you could associate with, and you maybe you'll end up developing some really close relationships.
If you think it's the right thing to do or the good thing to do, then do it. Mm-hmm. If you then get bad results, rethink. You know, check your premises, but you'll probably get either good or acceptable results.
Yeah.
So I do agree with you that living that way is a great way to start reversing this.
Yeah.
But also, when you encounter it, someone comes and sugarcoats something or lies to avoid confrontation, you should probably communicate it and say, I don't appreciate this, or this is not the way I like to handle it, and please don't do this, please don't interact that way with me in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And be prepared to back that up with, maybe if they continue to do it, maybe explain to them again or give them, instructions on how to not lie to you, or say, I'm sorry, I don't want to associate with you anymore because of this.
Sure. Yeah. I think that last option would be probably my last resort. But,
sure.
But yeah, it certainly is an option because you only have so much time in life, right?
Yeah. Do you want to spend it with people who are going to lie to you if that's important to you?
No, I mean, you want to spend it with the best people you can find, of course, right? Can we give a couple specific examples of this? Because I was thinking about how do you give honesty to someone in hopes that they'll want to reciprocate? Well, it could be as simple as something like this. The other day I was talking to a friend, and the friend was describing something that they were about to do that they were looking forward to and that they were happy about. And so I said, I'm imagining you doing that, and it makes me really happy. I'm excited for you. That's something that not many people would probably say, even though maybe they might feel it. Basically, I felt something that maybe would be considered kind of touchy-feely or whatever, and I just said it out loud. And
well, that's great and positive, but I don't see how it's related, because there was no lying, there was no sugarcoating, there was no confrontation avoidance.
No, there's no confrontation avoidance in that situation. But just that being willingness to be a little bit more open and be more vulnerable.
Okay.
Because, I could say that to someone and I could picture a lot of people responding to a comment like that with, oh, that's lame, or, what are you?
Hippie.
Yeah, hippie or something like that. You're talking about happiness and rainbows.
Rainbows.
Or what about just saying something like, hey, I really appreciate you doing that for me. You didn't have to go out of your way to, whatever favor someone did for you. I really appreciate that. I really value your friendship. Something like that.
Okay.
I don't know. It doesn't have to always be a conflict situation.
Well, I see that as good. I just hardly see that kind of communication as related to this question.
Oh, I think it's related. Because when you give it, you get it back. And then it applies to situations that could be conflicts, because if you establish that comfort level,
if you have a conflict with someone and you are honest but tactful, then perhaps the next time they have a conflict with you, they will be honest and tactful.
Yeah, or you talk about it before it actually becomes a conflict. When you have that open line of communication, it doesn't have to get to the point where it's almost a conflict, right?
Well, yeah, but there's probably some conflicts that happen suddenly, spontaneously, and maybe not even with someone you know.
Mm-hmm.
Two people race for a taxi.
Well, I mean, the instance that I thought of that happening was with cops.
Okay.
And there's definitely no open line of communication, because most people are thinking, if I talk to them, they're going to hurt me.
Yes.
Right?
Well, no, most liberty activists think that. I think
most people think that.
I don't think so. I think most people blab to cops. They talk and talk and give them any information they ask for, and they talk about social things where the cops fishing for things to arrest them
for. Well, I think they do that because they're scared.
Yes, but that's not what you said. I think people talk and talk to cops, not talk because they think they'll get hurt. I agree that people realize the cop will hurt them. If the cop doesn't get what he wants, he's going to arrest them, he's going to beat them up, he's going to detain them, he's going to do something
that
will hurt them.
And they think that blabbing to them is going to prevent that. So they're still motivated by fear.
That could be, yes.
But the point is, in that situation, there's not an open line of communication.
No, definitely not.
But with a friend, like when you establish that open line of communication, there's so much less potential for a conflict to arise that might arise from sugarcoating something or not completely telling the truth, because you feel so comfortable with that friend or that person essentially saying anything and saying it in a way that respects their feelings and so forth. So there's just less, it stops the conflict before it even starts.
Great. Like,
I don't know. Is that all we want to say? This has been a long
time. I think so. Yeah.
All right. Well, if you have a conflict with us, if you,
then you
if
can
you have
shove
something
it.
You want to be really honest with about us, I mean,
to us.
Wow, I can talk. I have a podcast.
Send us an email at questions@booktherapy.com.
Yes, please send us an email. Or call us 419-PT-LOVE-4, as our theme song suggests.
Right.
And go to our website, porktherapy.com,
yep,
right?
Yep.
porktherapy.com.
Indeed. Thanks for listening to the show. Thanks for asking the question, Joe.
Yeah, thanks, Joe, and we wish you continued luck.
Yeah.
Feel free to keep updating us. We always like those updates.
Yeah.
And we're two crazy porks who host a show. And we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
They're two crazy porks who host a show. They give relationship advice that you ought to know. Your thirst for entertainment, they will quench, cause Stephanie's a darling and Mike is a mensch. Pork therapy, advice this good is a rarity. It's cool, fun, and introspective. Relationship talk from a liberty perspective. Oh, and did I mention you can leave a message, you can voice a question, a joke, a comment, or something more at 419.